Welcome to
2 o'clock with Kella.
Bring your tea
and leave with more.
Hello.
Hello. Happy New Year.
Happy
Welcome
New Year.
Back to more 2 o'clock with Kella, season three. Yeah.
Season three, part two.
Part two. Yeah.
Episode part B, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Happy 2023.
Yeah. Very excited. We've got 11 cracking episodes planned for you in the lead up to Easter before
exactly.
Have a little Easter break and go on to series four.
I can't believe we're going to be going on to series four.
Each other.
But we're getting ahead of ourselves because
yeah.
We're still in series three. We've still got lots of great stuff coming to power us through the darker months before it gets to spring.
Yeah, did you know yesterday? Wait, was yesterday a Monday or not?
No, it was a Tuesday.
No, do you know, 2 days ago, 2 days before we were recording, it was Blue Monday. So now is the time for lovely chats and lovely content.
Exactly, exactly. And the days are getting longer.
Yeah.
Hopefully the weather will get nicer. I mean, we are in the dead of winter still, but...
But so many exciting things to look forward to. It basically pancake day.
Basically. And I think by the time this comes out, it will basically be pancake day. And
yeah,
basically be your birthday.
Yay. And so, Galentine's Day.
Galentine's. Oh, so exciting.
Yeah, it's all coming up.
Yes. So.
Yeah. But.
Very, very exciting.
Before we carry on with the new year, we're just going to have a moment of reflection. We're going to leave our blonde moments and what we've been consuming till the next episode when we get back in the swing of how we normally do our episodes, but we're just doing a 2022 wrap up because why not?
Well, why not? So we're going to look at our top films and books.
Yeah.
Maybe music if we want to see it, but I feel like that'll just be Harry.
Yeah. Are we doing, so is it top three?
Yeah, I think so. I haven't ordered mine 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah,
but just, in the general. But if you have ordered yours 1, 2, and 3, then that's fine.
I wasn't really sure. Well, also because I couldn't think of it for films. But for books, I actually ended up having 5 just in case. Actually, no, you wouldn't have any of the same ones as me. But it's just so hard. Because with films, I couldn't remember what I'd seen anyway. So I just did 3 from the last year. But with books,
yeah,
there's
really
so
struggled.
Many between us. I was like, I don't know how to narrow it down to 3. So what do you want to start with, books or films?
Should we start with books?
Yes, please. Yeah. So we get to trade again. This is like our first ever episode where we just traded our top 3 films back and forth.
Yeah, and what's happened to my voice there? Yeah, I think that's what we should do on this one. So do you want to kick us off with one of your books?
Okay. I still haven't decided which of the 5. Okay. I want to talk about Green Lights by Matthew McConaughey, because I think I must have read this after we stopped doing the What We've Been Consuming, because I haven't mentioned it on the podcast before, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Have I mentioned it? Well, anyway, I'm going to bang on about it.
I don't know. You've mentioned it to me, and I need to read it at some point.
Yeah. No, genuinely, I think that is in my top 3, because it's 5 stars from me. It's so, so fun, so interesting. And so it's Matthew McConaughey's memoir. It only came out, a couple of years ago?
Yeah, I think so.
And it's just the best memoir I've ever read, the best nonfiction I've ever read. I just can't recommend it high enough. Even if you aren't particularly a fan of him, it's just, he has the craziest life stories. I don't want to spoil it, but one story pretty early on is that he just moves to Australia when he finishes high school because he doesn't really know what to do. So he goes over there to do some kind of exchange thing and live with his host family. And then they're really weird. And then so it's just liven up his life. He's like, do you know what? I'm just going to become vegetarian and run miles every day. But then they don't have a lot of veggie food. So every night for dinner, he eats a whole head of lettuce covered in ketchup. And that's the kind of vibes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we get throughout the entire book. It's just the craziest thing ever. You just don't know what he's going to come out with. It just doesn't read like the life of an actor. I was like, what is this? I honestly, unputdownable. So fun. And they have an audiobook of
Oh.
it, which I do, you know, I wouldn't be against listening to it again because he does the audiobook, he narrates it,
Yeah.
which is pretty cool. I like it when celebs do that. But the only criticism I'd have of it is there's a lot of spiritual stuff, which, you know, fair play, but so it's not for me. But because he has loads of bits where he's handwritten his mantras, that kind of thing, and green lights is this whole metaphor of well,
Okay.
like an approach to life and seeing things as positive and all that kind of stuff. I'm a bit too cynical, and I think it's a nice idea. So I didn't read all his extra bit, but everything else around that, it's very easy to just extricate that bit, which I did. It's just, I can't think of any other word other than just it's so interesting. So I definitely highly, highly recommend. There's just so many stories in there that I was just telling all my friends. I kept telling you as I was going through it. I was like, what is this? Who is this man? And also, it's not that long. I think it's maybe like 280 pages.
Okay. It's
It's
definitely
a big book.
something that's been on my list for such a long time because he's such an interesting person. So
I think,
it makes me want to read it even more.
yeah, because so many memoirs, I think you're not old enough. Why did you write one? Or they're just actually kind of dull. But he's someone who I was like, oh, yeah, like you did need a memoir. Could probably do another one. Anyway, yeah, that is the end of my rating about that book for now. What would you say was one of your top three books of 2022?
I think one of mine is Norwegian Wood by Murakami. I would say. Because I don't know whether, because it's about a man who's on a plane going somewhere and he hears the Beatles song Norwegian Wood and it like transports him back to his university days. And then the rest of the story is following him through his few years at university and his learning about himself, becoming himself, his relationships with different people. And there's, I don't know whether it was because it was about set the words. I don't know whether it was because like the central characters were all university students in a very similar kind of point of life to what we are and kind of dealing with some of the same but some different kind of elements and challenges and things that come from that. One of the girls who he's kind of in love with, she's got this really complex mental health and mental illness things, and she ends up going to this, I don't even know what it is. She ends up living in this kind of secluded community that's meant to help her. Oh, I'm butchering this. Basically, I just really enjoyed it because I think it asks a lot of the same questions and deals with a lot of the same things that kind of
You're definitely selling it to me. I've wanted to read Murakami for ages, and Norwegian Wood is definitely, that's one of his most popular ones, isn't it? So, have you read, I can't remember, have you read any of his other ones?
I've read a collection of short stories called, is it called Men Without Women or something?
Oh, yeah.
Which his writing I enjoyed, but the actual stories not so much because they were all kind of male protagonists, very male stories, and I felt like I couldn't relate with the issues in the same way.
Yeah.
So Murakami, Norwegian Wood, I really enjoyed it. I think because I really enjoyed it because I felt, because I obviously I could relate to kind of that period of like your early 20s, moving away from home, figuring out what you want to do with your life and your kind of relationships and friendships with other people. And I just thought it was a really interesting like depiction of that. And it's just one of those kind of snapshot novels where it just shows you like a couple of years in this guy's life and then it ends. And I quite like books like that.
Yeah, that does sound really, really good. I think that obviously Murakami is popular for a reason, and that's one of his most popular books. So I think that's a good recommendation from you there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lovely.
What's another one of yours?
Okay. Which one to go for? Okay. I am going to choose It's Kind of a Funny Story by Ned Bissini.
Nice.
And do you know anything about this? Have you seen the film, or is it just from me talking to you about it?
I only know it from hearing bits from you.
Okay, cool. Weirdly, I read it around this time last year. Well, actually, that's not that weird because it was, we're talking about 2022, what we read. But yeah. This book was on my to-read list for the longest time, and I didn't read it for ages because I thought, is this going to be too much? Because I knew that it's about, I think he's about 15, this guy Craig, and he really struggles with clinical depression. And trigger warning, he gets to the point where he has suicidal thoughts, and so he checks himself into A&E and ends up staying on a mental health ward, but it's actually the adult one. He doesn't get put with the teenagers, and I think he's in there for about 5 days maybe, but it's pretty much all based on Ned Bissini's life. And I thought, oh, is this going to be super intense to read and too much? But weirdly, it's so funny, and I think it deals really well with balancing talking about things that are really difficult to talk about in a sensitive way, with also making it not enjoyable to read, but like it isn't really, you know, down your throat, like in your face, to the point where you're like, oh god, like that was a heavy read. Because I think obviously mental health is a heavy topic, but it's nice when it gets mixed in a bit more with bits, like see the funny side of it. Not that there is always a funny side, but
nice sometimes,
yeah,
see a funny side. Yeah,
yeah. And of course, as always, I'm saying this as a mentally ill person, so, you know, like, yeah, I hope I'm not saying that in an offensive way. But
no, I don't think
it's about, it's maybe like 300 pages long. I'm saying the book lengths of all the books I mentioned because I have big book fear, so if I'm recommending these to people, I'm like, just letting you know, it's very doable and it's big font. So I got through it so fast. I think also because I found it super relatable, but it's still really good read if you don't find it relatable, and 100 times better than the film, which I didn't even finish because I was like, this is just nowhere near as good. It was a bit painful.
Wow.
Yeah, and I started folding over all my favorite pages, and then it was one of those where I just had to stop folding over because it was just getting ridiculous.
Oh, I love that though, when that happens in a book.
Yeah, and it's just one of those books that just really moves you and stays with you. So I just had to say it for one of my top three. I could not recommend it highly enough. It's more marketed as a YA book, but I think, well, obviously YA is targeted really at quite a broad range of adults as well. And this one especially, I think it's pretty much anyone like 15 and up would get a lot out of reading it. So yeah, thumbs up from me for the book, but not for the film, so don't be put off by that.
Yeah, that is good. Oh, very exciting. I guess maybe jumping slightly off the back of that one, it kind of but not really, one of, I think another one of my top books this year is Lovely Bones by Alice C something, I can't remember her surname. Again, it's not the most light-hearted book in the world because it's about a girl who gets murdered, so it's not a light-hearted book, but I think it really interestingly is a story of grief from the person who's dead, as opposed to like just the people who are left living. if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's kind of an interesting new angle of viewing grief and loss, when you do see the family and the friends and all of them kind of trying to figure out what happened to this girl. And I just, as well as it being quite hard and painful to read at points, I also thought it was really beautiful as well. I haven't seen the films, so I don't know what the film is like.
I have heard really good things about it. I don't know like how well it's been adapted, but standalone, yeah, it's supposed to be good.
But I don't know, there was just something about it that quite stuck with me, and I think I'll definitely see myself rereading it, even though obviously it is a hard book, because it's about a child who gets killed, and there's all this about how her family are trying to move on but wanting to kind of keep memory but kind of figuring out what happens. So I guess it's kind of quasi kind of detective in that sense.
Yeah,
but
it's a funny one, because those kind of books are really tough, but
yeah,
at the same time, sometimes the tough books are the best ones, because they really get like down into the meat of it. That's probably not the best way of putting it, and not like glorifying anything at all, but it's just some of the best books are the ones that make you really feel, you know.
Yeah, and I guess like you were saying with It's Kind of a Funny Story, I feel like they're kind of on a similar vein in that respect.
Yeah,
I don't know whether part of the fact that I was so moved by it, because I have a fresher feeling of grief and an understanding.
Yeah, true.
So there's that kind of, I don't know.
Yeah, that makes sense, because you, when you read, you bring your own experience to the text, definitely. Yeah. Do you know what I was just thinking, though? I have no idea why, but when you spoke to me about it before, when you had originally read it, I really get Vicky Angel vibes from it. You know, the Jack Nicholson book.
Yes.
Like, if that was an adult, if it had an adult version, I feel like it would be this.
Yeah, I think, yeah, definitely. Because this is, and I think it is marketed as an adult book.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. Yeah.
But that's interesting in itself, that there are children's and young people's versions of these sorts of stories. So I guess they're stories about big important parts of life, both the good and the bad parts.
Yeah, so true. It's interesting that we've both picked quite, not necessarily serious books. I'm not using my best adjectives today.
Don't worry, neither.
It's interesting to note that our favourite books so far have been the ones that are like big life stories or dealing with difficult themes. I think it's because, as much as reading is about escapism, I think also you want to be moved by a book, and have a book leave its mark on you as well. So those are the ones that like really stay with you, as much as like the light-hearted ones are also really good.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because it's a good way of kind of helping you mediate and figure out what you're feeling and how to deal with.
Yeah,
it was the power of a good book, man.
I know, right? It was one of those things that I'm sure you've started doing at the moment at uni with children's literature, when you're thinking about why do we read, and there's so many studies about, especially with children, it making them more empathetic.
Yeah,
and I think that this is definitely applying to the books that we're talking about, and but also being more empathetic for ourselves, or having more self-awareness, and being able to draw parallels between our own lives and the text. I think that we're big fans of doing that, so when we're reading these, we're like, oh yeah, like we really can empathize, but also get something out of it. Like, it helps us deal with our own situations, which essentially just saying like that is what a good book is.
Yeah, definitely. What is your third book in your top 20?
Oh,
and then we can give some honorary mentions at the end as
okay, I'm gonna be cliche.
Okay.
and end with Colleen Hoover's It Ends With Us, which I was reluctant to talk about because it is really cliche and everyone talks about it on social media, but I just couldn't not mention it. It's just, I just, you know how much I love that book, and it 100% was my favorite book that I read all year. It's incredible. And I know I definitely have spoken about this before, but it's just time to talk about it some more. Why not? And also, we'll be putting the timestamps in the description. So if anyone is really like, oh, I can't bear to hear about Colleen Hoover again, then you'll be able to easily skip over this section. Just saying.
But I'm sure they won't want to.
Yeah, okay, thanks. So, just in case you don't know what it's about, it is, trigger warning, it is about domestic abuse. So it is a tough read, but if you're like me and actually did not know what it was about at all and thought that it was a really cutesy romance book, then you would absolutely be shook, because as going through it, it really seems to creep up on you, the domestic abuse, because it starts so small. And I didn't necessarily realize that it was happening until it got too late, and she keeps justifying his actions. And so I was very much reading it thinking like, oh yeah, that's all right, even though it obviously isn't. So I think it's important to have that acknowledgement at the start about, yeah, this is like, it is a book primarily about domestic abuse, because it's been marketed more as a romance book, I think. It doesn't necessarily immediately give that impression, which I think is quite bad actually, because obviously it's not romantic whatsoever. Well, there is one love story in it. So it's about, in the present timeline, the main character Lily, her falling in love with who will then be her husband, Ryle, and he's the one who abuses her. But there's also another thread running through it, which is about Lily and her her boyfriend Atlas from when she was about 15, 16, I think.
Okay.
And that is really romantic and adorable, because that's all I think it's like her diary entries. That is how you read that story, and so that is just the loveliest ever, and it's really emotional. But this for me is Colleen Hoover's best book. I think maybe I read 4 or 5 of them, I can't really remember. And I think it's because it just has more substance to it. Not that a romance book necessarily needs to have substance. And I feel like I'm not talking about this very delicately, because it is obviously a difficult topic, but I just think it's, I just like that she shows like the ugly sides of love, and well, it's not really love, like it's just so toxic by the end of it. But I think it's really important that we have a book like this that shows how, not only how awful it is to be a victim of domestic violence, but also to show how it can slowly creep up.
Definitely.
And like the red flags as such, because as I said, like I was kind of taken a bit unaware, and I didn't actually hate Ryle at all. Well, I did towards the end, but to start with, like, it was just, I felt really bad at the end of it, of how easily my mindset could change, and I agreed with Lily's mentality towards him, which is really scary. And so it's so important that we have books like this out there.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Like you say, it's so easy in, like, when you're not in a situation like that, or don't know one, it's so easy to say, oh, I would never, never let myself get into that, blah, 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 blah. But when you actually apply it to kind of a, air quotes, real life situation as such, and see it presented in that way and unfolding in that way, you realize that actually it's harder to spot and stop. And so I do think, from, even though I haven't read it, but I am going to read it this summer, I think it is a very important book.
It really is, and I don't think it gets the credit it deserves, because again, like, it's been listed under this romance genre, which everyone always seems to slay and not take seriously. And admittedly, some of her writing is a bit cringe, especially I don't like the names. I've said that multiple times on this podcast, can't stand the name. But I think that it's really good in not glamorizing domestic violence at all. It's very warts and all, and it's just, it really packs a punch. I just remember I read it all in one go, and I rarely do that for a book, but I just couldn't put it down. I started reading it literally just before I went to bed, and then I was there crying at 3 a.m. when I got to this one scene, and I was just sobbing, and I was like, I can't remember the last time I had such a strong reaction to a book that I was with it throughout, and I was just absolute mess, and felt so much for the, and do you know what, it was actually, even though the language was a bit cringe, the structure and the general writing was really clever. There were so many little hints that she dropped, like set little clues up that would become really significant later on.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I really like that aspect of it as well, because for me, a good book is one that is like really hits me in the feels. But I like also when it's got that other layer to it, that's not just like so straightforward.
So yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and that was the first one I read. And then, yeah, this was my year of reading Colleen Hoover books, and I never read any that were anywhere near as good. And I was like, gee, well, I actually don't know if I am a fan now. Maybe it was just that one. But yeah. It Starts With Us, the sequel, that was really, really cute. Aww. So I also do recommend that. And that is the end of my raving about It Ends With Us, so thanks for sticking with me through that.
No, it does sound interesting, and I definitely will read it this summer to see. Well, I mean, with you rating it so highly, I feel like I have to. And
yeah,
so
you say, my friend Amelia, I was talking to her last night, and she told me she just read it and she liked it, and she normally hates those kind of books.
Yeah,
so that's definitely high praise indeed. So I think it is worth reading, even if other people are perhaps skeptical of it. That one alone, do you recommend? Anyway, what is your final book in your top three?
This is hard because there's a few, but I think I'm gonna go for I Who Have Never Known Men by Jacqueline Hartman, which is a very short book. It's probably 150 to 200 pages, not long.
Incredible.
Translated from French. Really interesting. It's one of those where you can't really give much away, but then again, there's not much to give away. But
okay,
it's one of those that is good if you go into it blind. So if you want to read it, I won't give away spoilers, but if you want to read it and haven't read it and don't want to hear me talk about it, then skip. Basically, the premise is that there's 39 women who are of all various ages who are locked in this kind of underground bunker type thing. And it's narrated by one of these young women. I think she's only late teens, early 20s. And it's slightly dystopian, not quite our reality, but similar to it type of setting. And the whole book just follows these women starting off in this kind of bunker, and then one day the bunker is left open and the male guards who normally come and bring them their meals and whatever just all disappear. So it then just follows the story of what these women do and what happens to them. And it's definitely one of these books that's full of questions, because obviously the characters are constantly questioning things. You as a reader are constantly questioning things because it's a first person narration of one of these girls who all he knows is life in this room with 39 other women. He doesn't really know anything, so you're kind of stumbling through not knowing with her. And I just thought it was really interesting, and it's one of those I would like to read again, because I feel like it's one of those that you would get more out of it every time you read it, because I think you'd notice small little things, or you'd start to kind of come up with little things, you know, like those sorts of films that the more you watch it, the more like tiny little details you notice.
Yeah, 100%.
I feel like it's one of those books. But I also, it's one of those books as well that either people really love or they really don't like, because they don't.
Oh, interesting.
Because I think it's so ambiguous and unclear at points. It's definitely one of those that allows itself to kind of have a second life away from the book and the author. Because although you can kind of read into what you think he was trying to say, you can also kind of read your own things into it. So,
yeah, because it sounds like it's more of one of those books that are not so theoretical, but a bit more like character study, not as plot driven, that you get a lot more out of analysing it.
Yeah, so
one of those books that we'd love as English students.
Yeah, and I think maybe that's part of the reason that I really liked it, because you have to infer so much about the world and these people from either like tiny little lines they say or things they do, and then obviously that's complicated by the narrative frame as well, but
yeah.
So yeah, I think that's why I like it, but I can see why other people wouldn't, because they'd be like, oh well, what's the point?
Yeah. No, I'm definitely going to add all of your books to my to be read pile, my want to read list on Goodreads.
I'm adding yours to mine as well. So
especially because you've picked nice books that aren't really, really long.
Yeah.
So that helps. Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, would you like to do
honorary mentions?
Oh, you've read my mind. Yeah, well, the other two that I really struggled not putting in my top three were Sorrow and Bliss, which is by Meg Mason, another big book talk sensation, and I have spoken about it on the podcast before, which is why I did not bring it up again. So if you want to hear about that, that's in one of our summer episodes. But yeah, in summary, it's just another really good look at mental health, but really, really readable. Yeah. And my other one in my top five was Still Me by Jojo Moyes, which is the third Me Before You book. And I was so surprised by how good it was, because the first 50 pages were awful, and then the other 400 pages were incredible. And it was just everything that I want in chick lit. Like, but it actually... It's good writing, because so often I complain that chick lit is just the worst writing. I can't handle the cringe. Oh, and also, I should say, I was thinking, there are so many other books I could mention, but Stoner, I loved, but then I thought, well, I'm not going to talk about that, because that may be coming up in a few weeks' time.
Yeah, that is also on my list, but I was like, I'm not going to talk about it. As much as I love it, I'm going to hold myself back on that one.
Yeah, exactly. What about your honourable mentions?
So alongside Stoner, which I just think everyone should read, it's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
I also had the two Sally Rooney books I read this year, which is obviously we have entire episodes on, because I absolutely loved reading Conversations with Friends and Beautiful World, Where Are You This Year?
Yeah.
Also, Home Stretch by Graham Norton. I read that this time last year upon your recommendation, and absolutely loved it and read it in like one day. So definitely recommend that. And also, I know that you weren't as massive a fan of Everything I Know About Love.
Oh, yeah.
But I quite enjoyed it. And I think because it was quite different from some of the other stuff I read this year.
Yeah. I mean, you're definitely not alone in loving that.
So yes, those would be honourable mentions.
I did see that quite a few people were posting their top 22 books of 2022. Maybe we'll do a cheeky post and we'll pick 11 each, then we can get all our faves in. Because also I was thinking I would definitely like Conversations with Friends is the best book that I read this year.
Yeah.
But I was like, we spoke about it for an entire episode.
Yeah, I think we should definitely do that. So check really out fun. Our Instagram for our joint collection of 22 books for 2022.
Oh, I love how much you love doing lists. You know, I love doing a top whatever.
I know, it's fantastic. I do love it.
So fun. Oh, I really enjoyed that. I just love hearing people chat about their favourite books. It's like between the covers, isn't it?
It is.
And we're going to be doing another between the covers rip-off or book club before the end of the series. I'm really looking forward to that.
So excited for that.
Yeah. Fair. Okay, is it time to move on to fave films?
Yes, let's do some films. And we decided that for these films, they can either be films that came out last year or films we just watched.
Yeah,
because there were maybe only a handful of films that came out last year that I actually saw.
Yeah,
exactly. Last year, but there was a couple of others that I'd seen for the first time last year, and same with Carrie. So these are just general films that we've watched. I guess kind of the same with books, like the books we read didn't come out.
Do you know what? I'm now doubting myself if I saw one of them last year or if it was the year before.
I had to take one of mine off the list because I saw it the year before, but because of the way the academic year works, I thought I saw it in the same year.
Oh, you know what?
So there might be a little bit of, if there's a little bit of 2021, it doesn't matter.
Oh, actually, yeah, I think I did see that in 2021. Oh, well, that's okay because I thought of one that I forgot. I wonder if we're going to have any overlap though.
Oh, I don't know, potentially.
I don't know. Should we switch up? Do you want to start with one of yours this time?
Okay, I'm going to start with The Batman.
Yeah, that's a good choice because I also wanted to pick that, but then I wasn't sure A, if you'd pick it, and B, I remember we spoke about it for like a good 10 minute chunk before.
Yeah.
Not to like put you off saying it, but I'm glad that you've brought it up. So anyway, floor is yours.
So I'm sure you can go back and find a more detailed little talk about the Batman. But I really enjoyed it because it was kind of a superhero film, but it didn't feel like a superhero film. Because I feel like a lot of the time with kind of Batman and Superman and Spider-Man and all these sorts of things, you have so many different versions and they're just retelling the exact same story kind of in the exact same way, just with different actors and different directors.
Oh, yeah.
Don't come at me, superhero fans, please. But I felt that this version of Batman didn't just feel like a carbon copy of the others. And I mean, I love the, is it Christopher Nolan who does the Dark Knight ones?
Yeah.
Christian Bale. I love those. I think that they're great. But I really like the fact that this new Batman, I can't remember who the director is. It feels different and it's a bit more of a kind of darker, grittier, more kind of real life version. As such, I think you can see how much more kind of broken Bruce is, and even the, oh my god, what's his name, the villain in the story as well,
the Riddler.
Yeah, and there are kind of points with that storyline where you can see how that could happen in real life, especially with the kind of Capitol attacks back in January last year. It felt very on topic, and I quite, yes, it was long, And there was a point near the end where I was like, okay, we're still going with this. But overall, I really enjoyed it. The music is fantastic. It's so atmospheric. It's,
oh my gosh, yeah.
So moody, so wonderful.
The also, whole thing is, Matt Reeves.
Yes.
Is the director.
Matt Reeves, thank you. So, caused him, and I think they're maybe meant to make more. Well, I mean, they set it up, definitely.
Oh, yeah, they confirmed the sequel, didn't they?
Yeah, so, yeah. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
That was not a short talk about it, but never mind.
No, you can talk about it for ages. I really, really fancy rewatching it right now that you brought that up.
Yeah, and watching it in the cinema was just amazing.
Oh, my God. That was the best film I've seen in the cinema. Well, to be fair, I say that every time I watch a new film in the cinema, but this was really good. So good.
Yeah, there are certain shots which feel like ingrained into my mind, like even that bit where... When he's in the car and driving away on the bike along the road in the rain.
Yeah.
And the light just gets further away. There's something about that.
Oh my God, and when then something in the way comes on. Ah,
yeah.
So good. Oh my God, yeah. That was, you know how much I also love it. I'm hopping on this tram with you.
Yeah, definitely.
But I just think you've hit the nail on the head where, like, I think it's been done so many times. Why not do something different with it? And I get a lot of people didn't like it because they're like, oh, it's not very, like, superhero standard. But is that not the fun of it? You already have so many of those movies that I just absolutely love how different this is, and that is more of a thriller. Like,
exactly, and
incredible.
He's not a clean cut good guy.
Mm.
That kind of tension, and it's a lot darker, but I think that works for the Batman story.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
He's a troubled man, boy, person.
Yeah. Oh, I just think I have so many good things I could say about this film. But yeah. I mean, it's not my turn. And I've said it before in another episode.
So yeah, would recommend that one.
Yeah.
To everyone. What is one of your top three films?
Okay. I want to talk about Bullet Train.
Oh, I haven't seen Bullet Train.
I think I spoke to you about it again, but not on the podcast. Because I only saw it maybe just before Christmas. And I've heard mixed reviews of it, but my take on it is obviously that I really enjoyed it. And I think that it should be given a lot more credit because I think it's really, really clever. And I don't know how good of an adaptation it is from the book. I haven't read the book. But it really made me laugh out loud. And I can't remember the last time I've just really laughed out loud at a film. Like, you know, obviously you do the appreciative chuckle, but this just really, really cracked me up. But it's also interesting in terms of, like, it's a bit of a mystery as well. Kind of a thriller. And it's got all this family backstory. And, well, essentially, it's about Brad Pitt getting on a bullet train in Japan and he needs to recover a briefcase, but there are also loads of other operatives on the train also trying to get the briefcase, and so it's basically an action film set on a train, but it's very funny, well, as I've said, and it's got an incredible cast. It's Aaron Taylor Johnson as well, and Michael Shannon and Joey King, Channing Tatum, actually, Sandra Bullock.
Very good cast. Star-studded.
Yeah, everyone's in it. Not that necessarily matters. You don't have to have big names in a film, but just so happens that I like all those actors.
Yeah.
And it's... I really enjoy the blend of, you know, like, learning more about Japanese culture. But also it having twists in it, which you wouldn't expect from something that's a comedy.
Yeah.
But it's actually super, super intriguing and really easy to watch despite the violence, because it's not really gory. And it's, you know, it's kind of like Kick-Ass energy.
Okay.
But I didn't really like that film. But this one,
yeah, I don't blame you.
And it's got all the stunts in it. It's a bit silly, but it's not completely silly. It's just a good balance. And it weirdly feels quite British, which again I really enjoy because British humour is elite.
Yeah,
and they have this whole random subplot about Thomas the Tank Engine. I'll tell you where that come from, but that's really good. So
that's funny.
Yes, I was really glad that I watched that. I didn't expect to like it that much, but I was like, you know, this is really good, and I think it's a film that would appeal to a wide range of people as well. It's a good one, say, if like you're having a family movie night and you can't decide what to watch, which happens all the time with us, then that's the kind of film that like everyone would enjoy it, I think.
It sounds really interesting because I haven't really heard much about it apart from the fact that there was a film called Bullet Train with Brad Pitt in it. So that makes me really want to go and watch it. And it kind of subverts what I didn't think it would be funny. I thought it was one of these kind of action, shoot 'em up kind of films.
Oh, no. It's so good. I was cracking up. I mean, you can imagine how funny Aaron Taylor-Johnson is. Because he's given his best Robbie accent, you know.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah. Okay, what's your next film?
I have so many films written down here that I need because I couldn't decide, so I'm just trying to pick.
Well, honourable mentions.
I'm going to go for Whiplash.
Ooh, interesting.
Because I watched that for the first time this year. And I really liked it. I mean, okay, again, most of my films on this list aren't very kind of lighthearted fun films.
I
don't know what that says about me. But Whiplash is, I think it was Damien Chazelle's directorial debut, potentially.
Oh, was it?
It's definitely Damien Chazelle. And he wrote it and worked with, the music is with the same people who did the music for La La Land. So he's got his little team going. It came out a few years before La La Land, I think. But basically, it's about a drummer and the lengths this drummer is willing to go in order to become the best drummer, and his teacher pushing him to extremes. And it's just such an intense film throughout. And it's not one necessarily that I enjoyed because like I was crying at the end of it. I don't know. I think it's just one of those that just really hit me. And this kind of story of this 20-year-old boy who is willing to put everything on the line in like for his musical career. Like his physical and his mental health and his relationships and everything, that it's very hard hitting but also wonderful at the same time. And I feel like Damien Chazelle has a lot he wants to say about the arts industry in all of his films and everything.
That's very true.
And yes, it is a clear, it's very different from La La Land. You can't really compare them at all, apart from maybe this theme of these people doing everything for their careers in the arts. I don't know. I feel like that wasn't a very good description. I don't really know what to say because the plot is basically just this guy trying to be the best drummer he can be and literally practicing his drumming to the point where his hands are bleeding. And just, it's obsessive the way that he practices and rehearses, but it's a very intense film that just sucks you in. Yeah, I couldn't take my eyes off it.
Wow. He's really having his moment as well right now, isn't he?
Yeah, because I mean, he's just released Babylon.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, he's definitely got got an eye for it and got a lot to say. And Miles Teller is fantastic.
Oh, well, I bet there's probably a lot of people listening that are Miles Teller fans. So.
Yeah, maybe I should have name dropped Miles Teller a bit earlier, but Miles Teller is the central character.
Yeah. Was the actual music really good in it, did you think?
Yeah, it was.
I mean, how do you know when you've got Justin Hurwitz doing it?
Yeah. And it was good because there's the big end sequence is at a concert. So it's just the music and them acting, and it's just I can't remember the name of the guy who plays the teacher.
Is it J.K. Simmons or something?
Yeah, him. He is also amazing.
Yeah.
In the film, the two of them. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a really good actor. Yeah.
So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, that was a solid choice from you.
Yeah. Bit intense, though. I seem to be picking in intense films, but I don't know.
No, it's nice because I'm not really picking intense films. So
okay, we balance each other out then. So that's
perfect. Yeah. Well, my next film is Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Oh, that was on my list as well. That's such a good choice.
Oh, well, I do have a backup option.
No, go for it.
Okay. Because it's very topical, isn't it? Just with the Golden Globes. You know, we love our award shows, and Michelle Yeoh won, and her husband in it won, whose name I can't remember. But it's one of those films that I thought, I'm not sure what to expect from this. I didn't have especially high hopes going in, but you know, my dad said, do you want to watch it? And I was like, yeah, why not? It's just the most bizarre film you ever see, isn't it?
It is bonkers. As soon as you think you know what's happening, it like changes on you.
Yeah, but it's exactly like, which is interesting. I picked that after picking Bullet Train. I'm very much on a whole, like this isn't Japanese, but it's very similar in terms of, like the whole Asian like magical realism trend that is so big right now. And, you know, because I've been absolutely loving all the like, well, you brought Murakami, and I've been loving like Kawakami and Kawaguchi. Yeah. And if you're a fan of those kind of books or anything else we mentioned, honestly, this is incredible. It's just surreal. And so the premise, I'll start there, is that Michelle Yeoh is working in her laundrette and she's very dissatisfied with her life. And then it turns out that she goes to sort out something at with the finance people.
Yeah, sort some taxes out.
Yeah. And while she's there, someone who looks like her husband but isn't takes her away and tells her that she is able to save the multiverse because of whatever reason. And so it's about her jumping between the different multiverses and trying to stop them from collapsing. But it's so silly, but in the best way possible. But it's also really, really moving because the mother and daughter relationship is really central to it. So also I was crying because I was like, oh, it's me and my mum. So as much as it's ridiculous, like I'm sure a lot of people have seen online about there's this one universe where she's with Jamie Lee Curtis, who's the tax woman, and they both have sausage fingers, like hot dog fingers, trying to play the piano. It's just absolutely ridiculous, isn't it?
it's so crazy. Such a good balance of those kind of ridiculous moments, and even the whole premise of how the world is going to, all the multiverses are going to be sucked into this donut.
Oh God, yeah.
Like
yeah.
It so perfectly balances these ridiculous things with these very kind of messages and things it's saying that you just so openly just go with it and accept what is happening. And it's set up in such a way that you're given just enough information to figure out how they're able to do their kind of multiverse jumping and call on their like other multiverse selves and whatever to help them. that you just, you go with it. You kind of, you don't fully suspend, you suspend your disbelief, but in a way that you understand it, how it works.
Yeah, true. No, I think if you're super into Marvel, maybe you'd be a bit skeptical watching this.
Yeah, but
but
I
you
think
just, it's very, yeah, you just kind of, you just have to go with it and be like, yeah, all right, go with the flow, accept it how it is.
Yeah, and it's one of those where this is how, if you're going to do a multiverse film, this is how you do it. This is done so well, and I don't think anyone's ever,
yeah, because you want to see the different
universes,
it's so fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of films are going to try to do similar things, but I don't think they'll ever be able to reach what this one does.
Yeah.
It's just, it's wonderful.
Yeah, I loved it. Essentially, it's a film about family and seeing the silver linings, appreciating life, appreciating your family and how important those bonds are. And I mean, obviously, that's always just lovely, isn't it? So. I think that was really sweet. And also the idea, like, your life's not over once, you know, you become a parent and your kids leave. And that was really cool.
Definitely.
I like that she's the protagonist, Michelle Yeoh, and she's the one going around doing all her kung fu insane training.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, go on. You know, don't always need, like, a Chris Evans to be doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that's really fun. Yeah.
And there's that really sweet line where she says to one of her multiverse husbands, I think in the reality where she's like a famous movie star.
And I know what you're gonna say.
Yeah, you know, I feel like everyone knows this line now.
Yeah.
I don't know what, like, it's become part of cultural memory. But where she's like, oh, in another life, I'd be happy just doing laundry and taxes with you. It's like, that is so sweet.
I love that line.
And that's kind of that kind of beauty in the everyday. And yeah, it also just makes you appreciate what you have.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so sweet. But also so bonkers and mad at the same time.
Oh, honestly. There were some things that I was like, was that really necessary?
I think I know the bit you're on about. Those
some of the
security guards.
Yeah. I was like, did we need that in this film? Please can you take this out? Thank you. But other bits, like I mentioned to you before when we were talking about it, I love, it's not really a spoiler, but there's a multiverse where they're just rocks and obviously they can't talk. And it's really, really cute.
Really cute.
Yeah, so lots to look forward to. Unlike anything you've seen before, though, I could not recommend that highly enough, especially because, you know, might be up for some Oscar wins and that. So
yeah, I think it might be.
Yeah. There you go. Sorry, what are you going to talk about now for your third film?
Okay, I'm going to talk about...
What was the one that you thought was 2022 or 2021?
That was June, which I did see in 2021. But that is wonderful, and I'm very excited for the sequel this year. But the film I'm going to talk about now, I think I've mentioned it briefly in what we've been consuming before, but is Memento.
Oh yeah.
Christopher Nolan, I believe. A mind-bending, time-bending film. The premise is there is a man who has a condition after a traumatic accident, after seeing his wife being murdered. I really like these light-hearted films, you know?
You do.
He gets a condition which means he can't remember anything, like he can't form memories anymore. So he gets loads of tattoos on his body to remind him what he's doing, and he's trying to kill the person who killed his wife, essentially. But the whole story is told in reverse, with him not being able to form memories or remember things. So essentially, it's really clever, because the way it's done, that the way it's told, is you're having to piece together everything at the same time he is. So it's like you as a viewer have been given his condition, where you can't remember anything and have to try and piece bits together, which is really interesting. And I'm always in awe of how the people who come up with these films, how their minds work.
Yeah, honestly.
To figure out how to show this. And I remember seeing a small little clip about Christopher Nolan talking about how he was creating this timeline. And there are a couple of jumps in it where it does jump to the past, back when he could form memories, because he has the memories he could form before his wife died, but not after. And there's just like the subtle uses of color in those scenes that allow you to realize that they're kind of the past and whatever. And then it doesn't end up the way you expect it in the end, because obviously it's a convoluted film, but really, really interesting. It is quite a popular one. It's quite an old one. I think it's from like 1999 or something. So it's quite old. But I just found it really interesting, and I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
And it keeps you questioning, problem solving, trying to figure things out.
Those films about time and memory, I mean, I'm thinking of like Tenet or Eternal Sunshine of Spotless Mind. Those are just such mind messes.
Yeah, they are. They really are.
So interesting. Like, I have been meaning to watch this. It sounds so, so good. Does Christopher Nolan ever disappoint? I don't think so.
No, I've not known him to disappoint. So yeah. But I guess if you're not really a fan of Christopher Nolan films with his kind of time bending whatever, then you probably won't enjoy it, so don't watch it. But if you're open to that, give it a go. I would highly recommend.
Oh, in all fairness, did we watch The Prestige this year, which he did?
Watch The Prestige, which is my favorite of his. But
no, I was gonna say, that's probably, say if people don't like his films that much, that one probably would appeal to them, because that's less his style.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, it's not recognisably him, I would argue.
Yeah, definitely. I forgot we watched that this year, but yeah, we did.
Yeah. Well, like, I keep saying this year, I mean last year, but we're only, like, what, 20 days in to this year?
So. No, not very far yet.
No. Yeah.
What's your final film?
Well, I was going to say West Side Story. Then I realised it actually came out just before, I think it was like Christmas time last year.
Yeah, it did.
But I have spoken about it before, so it's all right. Although, did I rewatch it this year? Oh, it doesn't matter. So anyway, I decided, I can't believe I forgot to talk about Darjeeling Limited. So that's my choice.
Oh, yes. Me too. I watched that this year.
What? Oh, I thought you didn't like it.
I wasn't sure. I need to rewatch it.
Okay.
I didn't make my mind up. Anyway, tell me why you love it.
Okay, well, I think it came out maybe 2007-ish, but so I saw it for the first time this year, and I really love it because I love Wes Anderson's style anyway, and the cast is incredible, as it always is with his films, and it's centred around three brothers, played by Adrian Brody, Owen Wilson, and Jason Schwartzman. And it's about them getting on a train called the Darjeeling Limited. And this train takes them through India, and they're going to see their mum. And I mean, they got on and off the train, but it's primarily set on the train. And it's just about the brothers connecting again and finding themselves, as grim as it sounds. And I really love it because, first of all, Wes Anderson colours, beautiful.
Beautiful.
Oh, obsessed. Like, the yellow in this film is unreal. It's all, like, he uses such warm tones. It's so lovely.
Yeah.
Oh my God, just obsessed. And just the aesthetics in general, the outfits, oh my God. Whoever did the wardrobe on this film deserves a raise, because I just, obsessed with Adrian Brody's outfit. His legs have never looked so good. I've never enjoyed a man's legs before, but I saw it and I was like, and he has open shirts. Oh, so lovely. And I like that you can enjoy it on one level for it being a story about these brothers reconnecting and going on the journey. But once again, Wes, there's this underlying thing, like there's so much to analyze, so many layers to it. It's super interesting. Like, it just makes you feel all the feels. It's got the best soundtrack. It's got the Kinks and Rolling Stones, all this 60s, 70s music. And it's kind of like weirdly upbeat but melancholic music. So it has this whole meta soundtrack to it. And super, super sad moments, but really sweet ones as well. And it made me laugh. And there's so many really cool technical bits to it. Like establishing motifs, lots of symbolism, real life context brought in as well that makes it even more moving. And it's not even that long a film either. I think it's only 90 minutes. But it's a really emotional film without feeling heavy. I think it seems light in terms of the colours in the structure, but the actual content underneath it is kind of dark.
Yeah,
but essentially it's another one of those family films. I love that. I don't know what it is. It's just so beautiful. But yeah, I don't know, I'm yet to convince you.
Well, no, I think I'll definitely give you, like, Wes Anderson aesthetics I absolutely adore.
Yeah,
but I think there was, I don't know whether it's because I only watched it once, I feel like, I don't know whether I'd feel different if I watched it again. I feel like there were just elements of the story that, I don't know, I can't, I don't want to say they felt redundant, isn't it? Like, there were some bits where I was like, oh, that's a bit of an obvious way of him kind of solving his big thing that he had an issue about, like, oh, he's been given this moment in order to, I don't know what I'm saying.
Fair enough.
You know that scene in, okay, this is weird, right? You know that, have you seen the new Spider-Man?
No.
Okay, I won't say this then. And actually then I just realised that would be a spoiler maybe, but
I don't care if you give me a spoiler. We can tell everyone they can skip 30 seconds.
Well, I was just going to compare, there's a scene in the new Spider-Man when obviously Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire come back. Yeah. And Andrew Garfield, his Spider-Man, is able to save Zendaya's character, who is what's his name, Tom Holland's, not Gwen Stacy, but Emma Stone. But and obviously Andrew Garfield couldn't save his Emma Stone in his film, and that was a really nice kind of, oh, he's been able to do this thing to save her when he wasn't able to save his her, whatever. And I'm linking that to the bit where Adrian Brody saves the kid, or doesn't save the kid in the river, and then is able to help save someone later. And I just felt it wasn't, I don't know if this is making sense, but it didn't feel as a succinct and clean way of doing that. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Interesting. See, enjoyed is not the right word, but that scene really stuck out to me because up until that point, it seemed really lighthearted to me, and I didn't think that it was that deep of a film. To me, it came out of nowhere, and I was really shocked. And then, like, I think that was like the really big climax in the middle of the film. And then after that, I felt like it was a lot more reflective and introspective. And
definitely.
Like, it was kind of like a big moment of, like, outpouring of grief and all this past trauma and that kind of thing, which is why I personally liked it. But I completely hear you, get what you're saying.
No, I don't know whether maybe I wasn't in the right mindset when I watched it, that I just felt that it felt a little bit, you know, like on the head. I don't know if that's the right
on the nose,
on the nose, and I don't know whether that's on the head. I don't know whether that's just the mood I was in when I watched it, because I am a mood film watcher.
Yeah.
And my mood does play into to how I view films a lot. So maybe that's why. So maybe I'll watch it again at another point. But I totally understand why you love it.
So, yeah. Thanks. Definitely. Is it now time for, do you want to do any honourable mentions?
Yeah, let's do a couple of honourable mentions.
Okay, you go.
Amelie, absolutely love that. Obviously, we have an entire episode on that. That's a nice kind of light-hearted, fun one. I watched The Joker for the first time this year, finally. Sobbed. Yeah, I don't really have much more to say about The Joker, but I really enjoyed it. And, Joaquin Phoenix, he is so good. Such a good actor. I love him. And then my final honourable mention is going to go to 12 Monkeys, which is a 90s film by Terry Gilliam. It's very weird, very out there. There's a little bit of kind of time bending. The premise is this guy is sent from the future to the past, unable to stop a deadly virus. Which kind of feels a little bit topical, but it was like a film from the 90s.
Yeah, interesting.
There's lots of twists and turns in it. I don't really know what else to say, but if you want a kind of weird film, watch 12 Monkeys. It's really good. I will let you have your honourable mentions now. Stop going about weird films myself.
No. Well, did we watch Chocolat this year?
Yes, I think we did have our Chocolat episode this year.
I'd definitely say that. You know how much I love that.
Yeah.
Incredible. Well, actually, we have a whole episode on that. So
yes, we do.
Yeah. Well, I basically just really enjoyed everything that we did for the podcast this year, to be fair. Other films I enjoyed watching this year, probably... No, can't go wrong with. I rewatched Bridget Jones's Baby, which is a lot of fun. Love that. Other films that I saw this year, I think I rewatched the Jane Austen Book Club, and that's such a good film. I really like that. I was just thinking about that because I was only saying to you the other day that I still need to read it.
Maybe this year will be the year.
It will be. I'm determined to read it this year. And what else? I've been watching some more musicals this year, and I watched Singing in the Rain. And
I also watched Singing in the Rain.
Oh, and you just can't go wrong with it. It's just lovely, wholesome content. Yeah, those are some of my other faves from this year. But it's so hard. We were saying, well, we need to make a list of all the films we watch each year because I just don't really remember.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to start that because we watch so many films and it's so nice looking back on what books I read by logging them on Goodreads. So I'm going to start a note on my notes app to log all my films so that I can look back.
Because I really wonder how many films we watch in a year.
Probably a lot. I probably easily watch at least two a week. And when I'm at home, it's even more probably.
You watch loads of your family.
We're very much film people.
You are. Well, I enjoyed that roundup. I've got lots of good recommendations to be getting on with now.
Same, both books and films.
So thank you very much for that, for sharing with me.
We hope you guys have lots of recommendations as well if you don't know what to read or watch this year.
So that sounded really like I could not care less, but I was just distracted by something out my window. But
that's okay.
Ella, what are we back with next episode?
Let me just check what it says because I can't remember. Where is it? It is Knives Out. Probably primarily the new one, Glass Onion, but we might talk a bit about just the original Knives Out as well.
Yeah, we might do, but I can't really remember it.
I actually did recent, I watched it about a week ago.
Oh, so okay.
I remember them both. But yeah, it'll be about Glass Onion. I'm excited to unpack that with you.
Yeah, so if you haven't watched it yet, we highly recommend that you do. Purely just because we're talking about it, but it is fun. Really good. Yeah.
It is very good.
Yeah. So we can't wait.
It's so there. Fun. It's about a murder, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Anyways, thank you all for listening, and we will see you next week with Right Out.
Thanks for listening to
The O'Clock with Keller.
See you next time.